Blog Talk Radio.
But we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about that, everyone. Hope everybody can hear me now. If Kim could let me know in the chat room, if you guys could hear me, it'd be greatly appreciated. Unfortunately, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, the music went off in my ears. I was like, what happened? And then I went to Kim in the chat room. Do you hear the music? No. I'm like, and then it all went down. Then it crashed, and I had to get back on. Here I am, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Gingles is back. I'm telling you, you're here for a great show. We want you to be right here live, and we are excited to have all of you live right here on Blog Talk Radio. That's right, right here. Excited to have all of you right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have our next guest on right now. Really exciting. Can't wait to chat with her. This is Edna J. White. Ladies and gentlemen, she's an author. She's got a lot of great things going on, and we're going to chat a little bit with her about her new book, That's right, her new book, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be a really exciting interview, so stick around as we talk to the great Edna J. White. Let's bring her on the air, ladies and gentlemen, shall we? Hello, Edna. How you doing?
Hello.
Welcome. Yes.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you so much. I'm so excited right now.
Yeah, this is really exciting. I'm so excited to be chatting with you today. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Edna?
Oh, what can I tell you? Well, I'm an author, and I am totally excited to be here today talking to you all about it. I do have a book that I'm really excited about, which is called Stuff Giving Voice to the Secret. It's a story about myself and my life with childhood sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And it's a guide, basically, on how I recovered. And I am still thriving, and I'm hoping that this book gives light and healing to other people.
Actually, really interesting.
So that's why,
yeah, I would love to chat about this. I see you got a couple other great books out there as well.
Yes,
I do. Yeah, it seems like you write in the genre, per se, of nonfiction. Would you say that you write in that genre, correct?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. A lot of these books here, you also have My Diary as a Backseat Driver, The Room to Grow, a lot of great books you got out here. You also have Strictly for My People, The Need to Revamp the New York City Mental Health Care System. Like that. I like that. I believe in that. We really need to do something with that. Oh, yes, without a doubt.
Yes, absolutely. I want to
chat about this this book that you just talked about, because I'm a big proponent, you know, of, you know, going against the people that, you know, that do these types of things to women, you know, and I feel that this is extremely, you know, important topic in today's day and age. Because there's a lot of this going on these days, you know.
Absolutely.
And but you know, Edna, why is it so hard for a woman to talk about this stuff? Why do you think it's so hard for a woman to chat about this?
I think it's very hard because a lot of it comes from being ashamed, and being that women are sexual beings, they're not thought to be believed. Because they are sexual beings, and they're not, you know, they feel ashamed. They're not going to be believed by anyone, and it's very hard to come out of that. Shame really does a lot of things to you, and it puts you in the isolation mode that, you know, you just don't want to be able to, you know, you really can't tell anyone. You really can't share it because it's, to some people, it's very hard to believe. And it's hard to accept. I know, you know, a lot of my clients sometimes even believe that it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes back to us in fragments, and it's even hard for us to believe. Like, we always think, you know, do this, or we second guess ourselves in any, you know, confrontation or trauma. We second guess that we could have done something to have prevented it, and it brings us to a place of shame that no one would believe us. So that's what it comes from. That's why it's not talked about.
That's interesting. No, that's very interesting, because when the action really has nothing to do with you, it's the action of the other person. In a way, I wonder, like, you know, why think that way? Why think you could change somebody that can't be changed, you know? And I guess that's the question, like, you know, why feel guilty yourself that you can't change the person? Because you can't change what other people do. And it's not your action, per se, to change. So I sort of understand where you're coming from, and I sort of don't, because it's almost like, you know, why in that case do you feel guilty for somebody else's action, you know?
Right. Well, it all depends on, too, where that person is when they are in that trauma. So if it was a child will take on the feeling that it is their fault. And sometimes even women do. You know, I've had a client that was just in an innocent date, and something happened. Mm-hmm. And she kind of felt that maybe she should have known, or she should have felt it, or she should have been able to detect it. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that it's not that they feel that it's all their fault. They just feel the shame, like they should have done something. There's something they should have done in their part. And it has a lot to do with the forgiveness of themselves and letting that part of them go, that it really isn't their fault. It's the person's fault that had it in their mind, and they didn't see it, you know? So mm-hmm. I always say hurt people hurt people. And when you're in an innocent state, and a date, or just not being aware, that's an innocent state, you know? And being a child is an innocent state.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're not expecting some, of course you're going to say, why didn't I? And it's, mm-hmm. you know, human nature is, why didn't I? Why didn't I see that? Why didn't I hear that? You know, what did I do wrong, you know? And you always go into yourself when trauma happens automatically, mm-hmm. you know?
That's interesting. It's an interesting take on it, because I always question the fact that why the woman stays with the abuser. You know, I always question, like, I'm trying to think, like, why would this woman stay with this man that just abuses them? You know, that's true. I could agree with that. But in your case, what was it that, you know, made you stay with an abuser? You know what I'm saying? In your case, per se, was it that you felt that you could change them? I'm trying to get the gist of how you think. I'm trying to get the gist
of
how you think.
For me, I was a child. I was a child.
Okay.
So it wasn't, it was a family issue. So
okay.
I was a child. So, you know, so it was something I had no control over.
Uh-huh.
You know
uh-huh.
what I mean? I, you know, until I got of age and I moved out. But that was something I didn't have control over. And then when I did say something, it wasn't managed properly by the ones that needed to take control, by the ones that needed to say something. It wasn't managed. For me, I felt like I was being ostracized for being who I was, you mm-hmm. know, and I was made an offering, you know, everything quiet, you know what I mean? So for me, it was a total different thing as far as an adult woman staying into a situation. They stay because they feel they're not going to get anything better,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and they know, at least they know that from this person, this is what they're always going to get. And they stay because of their self-worth is damaged, because of their self-esteem is damaged. They stay there,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, I hear you. Did you ever try to tell your mom, or I don't know if you have any siblings?
Oh, absolutely. I was at the age of 9 when I did, and I was met when I told her. It was on her face was like disbelief, like, "Are you sure?" And I knew that it was wrong, and I said, "Of course, I'm sure." And I was sent away for a year, lived with my aunt for a year, and moved from different schools, and then brought back, and was explained, well, he's going to stay, he's going to not do that again, and you're going to stay on this side of the house. And, you know, so we were given perimeters to go by, but the perimeters always were blurred lines. So it immediately started all over again. You know, until I was about 15.
Yeah.
And not until my brother, who is deceased now, stood up for me, and he knew what was going on. He stood up for me, and he fought. And he was, you know, and I was about 16 when I moved out. I moved out with a friend of mine, and I moved away. But he fought literally in a fist fight for me, you know. Mm-hmm. And it took a long while. And still, like, you know, at my age that I am now, there's still little remnants of it left, you know, because back in those days, they had to do what they had to do because of, quote and unquote, where would they go? What money would they have? Where, you know, mm-hmm. how could they live, you know, without the main person taking care of the family, the husband taking care of the family, you know? So I felt like I was the one that was offered as an offering. And then I stayed when I was older, like after 12, you know, up to 12 and older, to protect my sisters because I had four sisters.
Wow.
And I knew, you know, I knew that that would come around. So I stayed because of
It takes a really weak person to want to do that to your kids. You know, I mean, like, I don't know your father. I don't know your relative. I don't know, okay? But it just, to me, it takes a really weak person to do that to your kids.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And did you ever tell them, hey, stop doing that to me? You know, stop touching me this way? I mean,
absolutely.
And what did he do? He just kept doing it?
Absolutely, yeah. It was, I was not his child. And the words were, well, you're not my child. And you're special.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the words. You're special. You're special. And it kept, you know, going on. And as I got older, I kept, you know, I was fighting at, you know, older age, you know, after 12, you know, 13, you're fighting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, threats. Well, if you don't, this is what I'm going to do to the next one.
Well,
so it was always something like that.
Did you come to a point where you just gave up because he wasn't going to stop? Did you just come up to, or did you just keep fighting him? Did you just keep fighting?
I kept fighting. I kept, you know, at the age of nine and 10, I started to learn a little bit more. But after that, when I became a teenager, it was, you know, I was always fighting and always staying away from him. But I was really afraid to leave because of my sisters. I was concerned about my sisters. I was really, really concerned about them. And I would not allow that to happen to them, you know.
I mean,
because of that.
So with you staying, he didn't touch your sisters? Did he touch your sisters at all, or no?
One of them, yes. And she left, and she started using drugs and you know, really just being really out into the streets. And she had a hard life, very hard life, very hard life. But she left.
Yeah.
She immediately left, and she was only 15. She left immediately.
Wow.
You know, but we were, there was three of us, which were his children. You know, four. I'm sorry, counting my brother, but two were his kids. So he never did that with them, but with us, he tried. Yes.
Wow! Unbelievable. So. In this case, you're older now, right? And how does this affect you today? Does this affect you at all today? Does this still affect you in any way? Yeah.
Absolutely. As I was getting older and going through the survivorship of it all, emotionally, it does do a lot to your ability to figure out or trust other people. So for a very long time, I'd say between 18 and 25, I was very angry. I just walked around with anger, a cloud of anger around me. So I was very angry, and I was very, staunch against men. I just didn't want to have anything to do with them. You know, didn't want to have anything to do with them at all. And it also plays a lot with, you know, as I talk about in my book, it talks about, you know, all the different layers that it does involve. And it actually involves your eating habits. It actually involves, you know, why you wear clothing. It involves so many areas in your life that when you really look back, you're like, wow, I did that because of this. Or, wow, I say this because of that. So, you know, there's a lot of things that really don't realize it, you know, even in relationship. There would be triggers as to, I didn't like people with mustaches for a very long time. Never knew why, but it had to do with that. It had to do with that, you know, and never liked to be kissed. And I was like, I wonder why. And it had to do with that. So it's a big layer, you know, there's so many layers that are affected relationship-wise, even with, you know, your family, you know, you kind of guard yourself from them because you don't want them to, you know, pretty much know, or you don't think they'll believe you. So you kind of build walls up with even your family. You truly don't, you know, communicate well with them or love them well because you want to keep those borders up and you want to keep those walls up. So it does affect you in all those areas.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, but you could be better than that. You know that. You could be better than
absolutely.
That.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and you could, you know, change your family's history by doing better in your relationships
absolutely.
And stuff like that. Have you tried to bring men into your life? Are you married or are you
I'm divorced right now, but I am, you know, I am dating. I've learned that I had to take care of myself first.
Yes.
I had to heal from the inside out first.
Yes.
So
yes.
I can't give something if I don't have it. So I had to work on myself.
Yes.
And after my divorce, I really sat down and started dealing with myself and figuring out why I did what I did and take accountability of myself and start to really find the original self of me.
Yeah.
Because it was lost so far down because of all the mud and the, you know, the poison. It was so far down that now I am like in a different place where I am so happy. And I'm open for love, and I'm open to different opportunities, and things are just flowing amazingly because I've spent some time with myself, learning my original self.
Yes, and that's so important.
Yeah.
You have to learn yourself.
It is.
You have
it
to
really
learn
is.
About yourself. You can't give to others if you can't learn
you
about
can't.
Yourself. No,
that is correct.
And it seems like
and that's
you gave
what I speak
so
to other women about.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, I
I'm
speak
so
to other women about that.
I'm so proud of you.
I'm
really.
Sorry.
I'm really very proud of you.
Thank
I mean,
you. Thank
you deserve
you.
To be loved. You deserve to be loved.
Yes.
After everything that you
yes.
went through, you deserve to feel that good positive love, you know, after all
yes,
of that.
Yes, I do.
You know, so
absolutely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Did you ever
thank
try
you.
To confront? Did you ever try to confront him as an adult? Did you ever try to confront him as an adult?
Yes, yes.
And what happened with that?
Well, it was a very weird circumstance where I was part of a church for many years, and I was the assistant pastor of the church. And as I look back, I see that most of the time, when it's involved with a family, incest or anything like that, or child abuse, they swarm around you to keep the secret a secret.
Mm-hmm.
They always swarm where you are to keep the secret a secret, or to make you be the liar or the, you know, the misfit. And so my parents started to come to my church, and I was livid, you know, it was not only now I'm raped at home, I'm raped in the spirit. So, you know, church is supposed to be a spiritual place. Now I'm raped in the spirit, so they're there. So he becomes the deacon, and I'm very upset, you know, and I'm very annoyed. So I speak with the pastor about it, and they have us, you know, talking to one another, and he said to me, well, I'm sorry, like nonchalantly, and I said, I don't accept it because I don't believe it's genuine. And, I had a conversation with my mom, and that's when everything just started spilling out. And my mom is like, well, I can't do anything about the past. I said, yeah, but you can do something about the present, and you have to take accountability. No one would take accountability, no one. Not until several years later, he had gotten sick and was, you know, on his deathbed. And he asked me, you know, he asked me to come over to their house. And I said, okay. Came over, and he said, I really do apologize. And I'm sorry for putting you through. And my mother, you know, in her denial state, said, you know, why are you saying that? Let's not talk about that. And that's when I knew that he was really, you know, he was really asking for, sincere about it. And I said, I forgive you. And I said, but I forgave you a long time ago, but I want you to have accountability so that this doesn't continue in the cycle of not the act itself, but the characteristics to carry on with my children so I could feel somewhere at peace and be able to share, you know, what went on with their mom, you know, and still have some kind of relationship with them. And it kind of freed me. It freed me from that part of it. But then I had to turn around and forgive myself because I, you know, I still was angry and I didn't know why, but I was angry because I felt I should have stopped it. And I had no control over the other person. So when I forgave myself and I really did forgive myself, I was free of it. So that's why I can talk about it. And that's why I can share it, and that's why I can, you know, there's nothing that triggers me, and I'm not sad about it. And, I'm, you know, I'm an open book to someone.
That's awesome. So I'm free. That's great. That's awesome. That's great. I mean, like, usually in that case, you know, the person, you know, feels that it's their fault, you know, that, you know, like, it's like, oh, I allowed this person to do this to me. Why am I allowing this person to actually do this to me, you know?
Right.
And that's the part you had to forgive within yourself. That's the part you had to forgive within yourself. Because when it comes down to it, it's not your fault that this happened. It's the other person's fault, you know? And And the bottom line is you got your closure there, you got your closure here, and that's how you're able to talk about it, like you said, which is awesome. So let's get into the book now, and thank you so much for being so open about your story here. Let's chat a little bit about the book. And I see a picture of you, I guess, here on the cover. That's a picture of you, correct?
Yes.
And you're looking out the window. What are you looking at? What are you looking at in this
I'm actually looking at a bird in that book. It was a it's a red bird. I'm not sure if it's a cardinal or not, but the bird had sat on the front of the bush, and he always would come every morning, and I was looking out there, and he actually was, like, looking at me, like, just sitting and staring at me at that time. But that was a great picture, and you know what was so funny? My grandson took that picture. He's only seven.
That's great. That's an awesome picture. You want to know what I see? Do you want to know what I see in that picture? I see you looking into the future, forgetting about everything in your past, and looking into the future.
That's absolutely correct.
Yes,
that's beautiful.
That's what I see you doing. That's exactly what I see you doing. And I see auras, and there's a wonderful white aura around you as I'm looking at this book. And that's telling me that you are moving forward. Yeah, it's telling me you are moving forward. I'm an empath. I could, you know, feel people's feelings as well. You know, and I could definitely feel that you move forward from this point. So that's awesome. That's great. And so on and so forth. And so how long did it take you to write this book? I mean, and how long did it take you to publish this particular book?
Well, you're not going to believe this. I wrote that book, I want to say 3 years before I even published it.
Yeah.
What I did was, it was sitting for a while in, I was going through the shame, you know, the shame of it. I was going back and forth. Should I do it? Should I not? I don't want to get anybody upset. You know, I was going back and forth. And not until my grandson took that picture that I said, I'm done hiding. It's time to give this whole thing a voice. And I, day before my daughter's birthday, I believe, I published it. And I had someone edit it a couple of times. I had a couple, you know, changes to it done. But I just put it out. Had a couple errors in the first beginning, but I put it out, and it just everyone just started reading it and enjoying it, and focused basically on the good parts of it, you know, not crashing anybody, but like telling it and not triggering anyone, but giving them a guide on how to come out of it, what things to do, and my part of the story and how I did, you know, and even points where I was at suicidal situations, I was able to come out of it. So it shows a variable of all of my encounters.
Yeah, definitely. So how do you break up the book? How do you, your writing style, how do you break up the book into chapters and stuff like that to pull people in to read the book? How do you do it?
How do I do it? Well, I'll tell you, I wasn't really sure how to do it in the beginning. The way that it rolled out, the way that it rolled out is the way I wrote it. I took it from one part to the next. I told my story, and then I went from there. I explained where it affected me, and I broke those parts down. So, like, you know, my relationships, my emotional status, my how it affected even my money, how I, you know, used money and how I didn't like money. Because that had some kind of relation to, you know, the abuse. So it was all like a guide. And I have a saying in there that says that we're like onions, and we peel, every time we peel a layer, we cry. Mm-hmm. And every layer is a different experience. You're going to find that until you get to, down to the sweet part of yourself, which is the original part of you. You're going to be going through those things. So it's okay. You may not experience it the same way I did. You may not even go through it emotionally the way I did, but it's okay that you do go through it. It's all right. You know, you may act out, but it's all right. It's your experience. It's no one else's. So don't compare your healing. Don't compare your situation to anyone else's. It's your journey. You have to go through it.
Absolutely. It's your own unique journey.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I tell everybody.
That's
why it's so important to tell your story, because only you can tell your story. That's my big thing.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
So I want to get into your coaching business a little bit, and then we'll get back into the book. But talk about what you do in your coaching business, and how can we find out more about what you do?
Oh, okay. Well, my coaching business means it's a mindset coaching. And what I do is it could be any type of situation, but I specialize with childhood sexual abuse survivors. Most of my clients come to me whether they're entrepreneurs or, you know, looking to delve into the inner part, why you're not moving to the next level, what's holding you back. And most of the time it's going to that root, which was, you know, the initial trauma, to build up from the initial trauma, reprogramming that thought, that situation, and building up till we get to the next level. So that's what we kind of do. Yeah.
So do you have like an office? Do you do it on Skype? How do you do it? Yeah.
Well, I used to have an office, and it had become, like, very strenuous for everyone. So now I just do Skype, and I just do phone conferences, and I do group counseling at the same time. So it's working out for me that I can stay in my pajamas most of the time.
That's good. There you go. That's perfect. You gotta love it, right?
So it works out. Yes, you gotta love it. So it's basically that's how I do it, and it's on your time. You can you can schedule time with me on my website. You just put in the time, and it confirms, and then we're off and running.
So what do you think your biggest accomplishment in your coaching business has been so far? Your biggest accomplishment?
My biggest accomplishment is being able, when you're a coach, you want to coach everyone. You want to coach everyone, But my biggest accomplishment was being able to be specific and being able to help that specific group, and not being ashamed of it. Because, when you talk about what we're talking about, it's taboo. No one wants to talk about it. No one wants to admit it. No one wants, but in that genre thing, working with those, with the specialization that I'm in, it's showing me that it's there, and that's where I need to start. So it's working out well for me.
And that's great. That's great. It's also that confidence that you built up that allows you to teach other people what you know from experience.
Absolutely.
I think it's that confidence that allows you to move forward in your life to teach other people and make you feel better about yourself as you teach other people what you know. So, I think that's what it is. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
In your estimation, is that what it is, basically?
I think it is. I really do, because I didn't have this confidence before, and you know how hard it is, and I know you do, to find yourself. And once you find yourself, you don't want to ever let yourself go. Once you find that true self of yours, it's like, yes, I found her, she's here, and you don't want to ever let that go. And that is part of self-esteem. That's part of self-worth. That's part of confidence, that you know who you are.
So how do you build these people up that don't have that self-confidence? So say I come in and I have a very low self-confidence because I was abused in my childhood. What's a day in the life of you?
Day in the life of what I would start with them is basically we would talk about, I would ask them a few questions, 5 questions, and they would answer them. Then we would go backwards, and then we would go back, and I wouldn't even say anything. I would just ask the question, well, why do you feel you can do that? And most of the time, they'll reveal it themselves. They'll answer the question themselves and say, this is why, and then get to the root of it. And it's usually like 2 or 3 minutes. It really is. It's not that hard. And then once we find the root of it, we build forward. We spiral up, and we talk about confidence and how can you build upon that. You can just say instead of saying, well, this won't work because, well, what if it does work? I will have this, or I will be happier. Spiral up. We learn to reprogram the way our minds are, the way our mindset is. We reprogram that, and we do that with affirmations daily, and we do that with meditation, and we do that with a form of sometimes with even exercise, getting in some exercise because, exercise is a great thing for your confidence too. Even just jumping jack gives you adrenaline. You know what I mean? It teaches something. It puts something in effect. Even, I do yoga. So it's like it does something for you to be able to connect with your body and know yourself. It really does.
Definitely. I was going to ask you about the tools. I was going to ask you about the tools and different services you use to help people. And I guess those are 3 of them. Those are probably 3 of them. Are there any other services or tools that you use to help these people?
Well, most of them are just exercises. I actually give them exercises that they do to let them know, you know, what effect that they're having on themselves. And most of the time, I have this really one I use a lot, and I have them write down, you know, what they feel about themselves, you know, why they feel that way and what they feel. So they write it down, and then we take the strips of paper, boil them up, and we burn them. And I said, now from this point on, it's going to be a new phrase. So instead of saying, I don't feel confident, now I'm feeling confident. You're going to write that. Those things that you used to, you know, say are now burnt and gone. And now that's going to be a new phrase, I am confident. Things I teach them also, things like can't have to be removed from your vocabulary. Things like if have to be removed from your vocabulary. So I give them a list of words that have to be removed and give them a list of positive words, you know, to replace, you know, what they're normally used to saying. Because we get in the habit of saying, you know, oh, I can't do that, you know, and it comes out so easily when, no, you shouldn't even say that, you know. And the most powerful word that you can ever use is I am.
Hey, everybody, I'm back. Sorry, everyone. I got kicked off again. Let me bring back on my guest, Edna J. White, right now. Edna, you still there?
If you own a small business, it's not a question of if some hacker is going to attempt to attack your company. It's a question of when. Let cyberpolicy.com keep you safe. CyberPolicy is the first end-to-end solution that combines cyber planning, security, and insurance. With CyberPolicy, your business will be protected against cyber attacks for as little as 40 cents a day. Visit cyberpolicy.com today and get a quote in just 4 minutes. CyberPolicy.com.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, sorry. I got booted again. I'm very sorry.
I know.
I don't know what's going on here. Come on. Blog Talk Radio. Come on. Anyway, no, I'm having a lot of fun with you tonight. Actually, I learned a lot from you, you know, in regards to a lot of different things tonight. And I want to, you know, really delve into, again, as we were talking, we were discussing modalities, right? I want to get into, how you do meditation with your clients. Is it a music meditation? Is it a guided meditation? What kind of meditation do you actually use, and how does it work?
Well, mostly when I began to do meditation, mostly all of them, they've heard of it but never used it because their excuse is I have no time. And I start them off for 5 minutes. So I would use music along with it as well as guided meditation. So I would be speaking now, you know, instruct them what to do, basically to relax yourself, you know, sit back comfortably in your seat with your feet flat, your hands to your side, breathing in and out through your nose, out through your mouth, making a circular motion, thinking only of your breath. So we just do that for like 5 minutes. You know, I would only, you know, let them go through that for 5 minutes and just think about your breath, feel that your hands getting, you know, heavy, loosening up, letting all the stress relieve you. You know, so I would go from their feet all the way to the top of their heads. So that would take about 5 minutes. And, you know, bring them back down, count them down, 10, 9. You're beginning to feel your hands, your feet. You're beginning to feel, you know, just bring them back up. And then as I count, get to the number 1, open your eyes and take a last cleansing breath. And that's basically would be 5 minutes. And they would, you know, it gives them, you know, some kind of stress relief. And they're like, I feel totally different. And I tell them, factor that in the daytime, at least before you leave running around crazy, willy-nilly all day. And it's just basically not, you know, focusing on any kind of mantra for the day, but just clarity. Because when you're in this world, I guess, and then with all the things that we're going through and we're dealing with emotionally, we don't have clarity. Our minds are 30,000 different places at once.
Oh,
and
yes.
Not one 30,000 gets done.
That's
so
right.
We try. Yeah, none of it gets done. So to have that clarity is so important for the day, the start of a day. You don't have that. It's craziness throughout the day.
Well, do you see a lot of these people, Edna, have depression or anxiety when they come to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they don't. Most of the time they're depressed and don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know it. It's become a mainstream in their lives, like, You know, depression is not just a form of being sad or alone. It can be, for us, we use things, like I would use food,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that would be a sign of my depression, that I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, you know, I would choose what I was going to eat. I would
mm-hmm.
choose, I would take the oddest thing, like macaroni and cheese. That's all I'm eating for the next year.
Because
mm-hmm. that was my form of control, and that was my depressive state. No one knew it. I didn't even know it. And when I tell my clients that, they're like, I choose certain things. I choose to do certain things. And, you know, I had one client that had an issue with her husband, and I said, well, what are you doing that he's saying this, or, you know, that he's bringing this up? Well, I don't clean up the house, or I don't do that. But why aren't you? And she had to realize, I'm depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it brings on an argument, and then the argument is you're not seeing the real part of it, that you're depressed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you're not seeing that part. So a lot of times depression comes in so many different states that we just think it's just regular, you know, gaining weight.
Right.
Depression.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Depression.
Oh, yeah.
It,
I was just going to ask
what
you
want.
About the weight.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask you about the weight and ask you about, you know, do you see people with eating disorders or obesity problems that come to you as well?
Absolutely.
Because of the depression and the anxiety?
Absolutely. Most of the time, children who have been in those type of situations, or even not part of it, but part of it, you know what I mean? Like maybe their sister, you know, has been abused and they know it.
Mm-hmm.
They have weight problems and they cushion themselves so that no one looks at them, no one, you know, they make themselves disformed.
Right.
Because they don't think they're, you know, they're beautiful, so they kind of make up a new body for themselves. Or
right.
they don't eat, or they don't eat. And that's a whole lot, that's a whole nother topic, you know, they don't eat, and that's even worse. So,
yeah.
they, you know, it brings on a lot of behaviors. At one time, I was cutting. At one time, I was,
mm-hmm.
I was actually... you know, scrubbing myself with a Brillo pad. That's
wow.
a form of cutting. You
yes.
know, washing yourself with a Brillo pad. That's,
oh, yeah.
you know, to the point your skin is peeling. It's a
yeah.
form of cutting. It's a form of self-mutilation.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes in different, you know, different forms, but it's all depression. It's all
mm-hmm.
a way of controlling what you can.
Wow. Wow, yeah.
You know?
Definitely. No doubt.
Mm-hmm.
My last question to you, unfortunately, we ran out of time here, but, you know,
that's
because
okay.
of Blog
right.
Talk Radio issues, you know, but it's all right. All right.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
You know, my last question to you is, how does it feel within yourself that you're mm-hmm. helping so many people with this book?
I am so excited that I'm helping, because I know there's so many people out there. When I go on speaking engagements, even at churches, and I'm very, you know, open, because there's so many damaged people emotionally, men and women, children and teens, you know, even older people, they're so damaged emotionally. That's why, you know, they'll say to me, that's why I'm not, you know, in a great relationship. I didn't put it together. You know, I didn't put that together. You know, I thought I was over it because it's old, you know, and they tell you to, get, you know, forget about it. But that's why you're not in great relationship with people. That's why a lot of things happen in their lives. And but I'm really excited about just touching people in that way, letting them know they can not just be survivors, but recover. That's a, it's a big issue, recover.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm,
just
definitely.
Surviving is not well, is not good. Surviving is just making it. Recover. You know, find yourself again, you know?
Yes.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hear you on that. I hear you on that.
Mm-hmm.
God bless you. You really made strides with your life. God bless you, really.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm going to give you a little promo time here at the end of the show. Of course, promo time is very important. Yes, and I want you to please let everybody know where people can find your books, you, and your coaching business on the internet.
Okay. Well, you can find me on Facebook, www.facebook.com/livingfromtheinsideout. Or you can look me up on Facebook at Edna J. White, easy to find. But I'm also on Amazon. I have, you know, a slew of books on Amazon, on ebook, and Create Space. I am available there. All you have to do is put my name in. I'm there. I'm also available in libraries around the country and at Barnes & Noble for any of my books.
Wow.
My coaching business is available. It is actually in all of my books where you can find me. And you can look for me on, basically on Facebook. Everybody sees me on Facebook. So Facebook is like, will direct you right to me. But I have a website called Let's Talk About It.
Awesome.
So that's where you can find me.
Awesome
right?
stuff. Thank you so much for being on the show. I so appreciate
Alrighty.
You. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you.
It's been
All right.
fun.
Thanks so much.
And you have a great rest
yes,
of your night.
Yes, it has.
Take
you
care.
Too. Bye-bye.
Bye now.